We have begun tonight the sugya of Ani Mahapech B'Charara. This is actually a sister sugya to the one we've been doing for the last month or two of Yari Lomnas of Asagas Gvul. We have actually run into Ani Mahapech a couple of times over there, and we'll see references in our sugya to Asagas Gvul. Nevertheless, in the Shulchan Aruch, there are two simanim separated by about 80 simanim. Yari Lomnas appears in the context of Nizkei Shcheinim, of zoning, of neighborly torts, while Ani Mahapech appears in the context of Mecha Chumemkar and Reish Laman Zayin. But nevertheless, they are closely related conceptually, and there is some overlap between them. The key phrase here in the Gemara is Ani Mahapech B'Charara Ubach Ravanot Lahimanu Mai Amar Lai Nikra Rasha, and that's how we paskin. So literally that means Ani, a pauper, Mahapech, difficult word to translate. It means he was angling for it, he was striving toward it, he had his eye on it. B'charara, some kind of loaf of bread or pastry of some sort. Ubach Harvanatla, someone else came and snatched it away. Nikra Rasha, he is called a villain. I'm belaboring the point of translating every single word here because virtually every word in this phrase is the subject of some dispute or of some machlokas, some shaila in the sugya. Ani. Is there anything significant about Ani? What's the halacha if he's not poor, if he's rich? Mahapech. That's one of the key words here. What exactly is Mahapech? How far along does your striving have to have gotten? Charara. Major machlokas. What the status of this charara is? Is it hefker? Is it a charara someone's offering for sale? Nikra Rasha. He's called a Rasha. Who calls him a Rasha? Are we actually allowed to call him a Rasha? Is it the Torah calling him a Rasha? Is it Daraisa? Is it Drabanan? What exactly are the consequences of being called a Rasha? Are there any halachic ramifications? Will Beis Din stop you from doing this? L'chatchila, b'di'evad. Will Beis Din force you to return it b'di'evad? All these points we're going to see in the sugya as we go, some of them in the Gemara of the Rishonim, some of them in the Achronim. But it's a fairly short memra with the surrounding sugya, but yet there's a fair amount of discussion. As I said, it links closely to Yari Lomnas, and there's a fair amount of discussion in the postgame, Rishonim, early Achronim, later Achronim, contemporary Svarim, and that's what we'll be doing for the next several weeks, 2 or 3 weeks probably. Now, as I mentioned earlier, we did see a certain overlap between this and Yari Lomnas. Basically speaking, roughly speaking, the difference between Yari Lomnas and Ani Mahapech is Yari Lomnas refers to general competition. You open a store, I open a store, you sell things, I sell things, you cut prices, I don't want you to cut prices. We're not competing over a specific deal, we just have competing businesses which naturally each one cuts into the revenues and profits of the other. Ani Mahapech refers really to a concrete, specific item or opportunity. In the case of the Gemara, it's either a specific woman, a specific charara, a specific parcel of real estate. Tosis is going to talk about a specific job. You have a specific job, and I come and cut you out, and I take your job. That's really, roughly speaking, the key difference between Yari Lomnas and Ani Mahapech. Yari Lomnas, in general, means competition, and Ani Mahapech means that I'm snatching away a specific deal that you have your eye on. And there is a certain overlap. There are certain cases. We had, for example, the very last thing we did last week, we discussed Rabbi Tauber's discussion of a bus or a car following the bus route and picking up passengers who are waiting for the bus. That could be Yari Lomnas, because I'm interfering with your livelihood. It's also Ani Mahapech, because we're dealing with specific customers who you feel are already waiting for your bus. Marufya we had a while ago. Marufya, the idea that there are certain customers who have an established standing relationship with a certain vendor, certain vendors, and you take them away, the source of the stringent view of Marufya, one of the sources actually is our Gemara of Ani Mahapech B'Charara. So by way of introduction, many of the shailos I mentioned briefly earlier we're going to see in the Gemara Rishonim this week. By way of introduction, I just want to discuss a couple of basic questions that arise in Ani Mahapech B'Charara. Just practically speaking, in my experience, the most common practical case of Ani Mahapech B'Charara that arises in our day typically is real estate. You have many cases where a property is for sale. Reuven starts looking, maybe even puts in a bid. Shimon looks, Shimon puts in a bid. Maybe Shimon knew about Reuven's efforts. Maybe Shimon didn't know what was going on with Reuven. But we've had many Dinei Torah about such cases where the first guy feels he's getting a good deal and wants to protect his deal. Second guy says, it's a free country, you can buy, I can buy, I don't know you were here. That's by far, I think, the most common application, very similar to the case in the Gemara of Rav Gidl. That's by far the most common application of Ani Mahapich in today's society, at least in my experience. Now, the title we used, Yonas and Zakem and I, for the current series was Dibs in Halacha. This kind of reflects the fact that we had some trouble figuring out exactly what the American or Western legal equivalent notion would be. And it's not that easy. There really isn't anything we thought of that was a very close match. As it turns out, upon further reflection, the closest thing in American law is probably tortious interference with contract. I was going through my notes on this topic. I saw I had a blog post from about 5 years ago I wrote. This was the height of the financial crisis, 2008, 2009. I currently have an account with Wells Fargo. This bank account used to be a Wachovia account. Wachovia was taken over by Wells Fargo around then. Now, it turns out at the time, Citigroup had been in negotiations. They actually had an exclusivity arrangement with Wachovia to buy part of their operations, their branch banking. Wells Fargo came along, decided to buy all of Wachovia. Citigroup was very, very upset. The actual deal, Citigroup's deal, was valued at a couple of billion. Citigroup sued Wells Fargo for $60 billion plus, $20 billion in compensatory damages, $40 billion in punitive damages. They had various theories for their suit. One of the key ones was tortious interference with contract. What exactly is tortious interference with contract? I'm not a lawyer, so what I'm telling you now comes from Wikipedia, the internet, and a brief discussion with my wife, who is a lawyer. One of the key cases in the development, it's an English common law doctrine. One of the key cases is something charmingly named Keeble versus Hickeringill. This is a 1707 case. Keeble had a commercial duck pond. He had some kind of pond that attracted ducks that he would seize and sell. And Hickeringill was angry at him. Apparently he used to have a duck pond and he felt that yard loneliness. He felt that Keeble was taking away his ducks. He went around with a shotgun and would fire it around and scare away all the ducks. He wasn't taking the ducks, he was just scaring them away. So Keeble sued and was awarded, I think, £20, which was, I guess, a substantial sum of money back then, 300 years ago. And the theory, basically, that was upheld on some kind of appeal was that this is what we call today tortious interference with contract. If Reuven is going to get something and Shimon comes along and interferes, blocks it, now the language with contract implies as a contract. Yari Lumnus has nothing to do with contract, but the truth is, even the legal doctrine is not limited to contract, as in this case of the ducks. There was no contract between Keeble and the ducks. Nevertheless, it's also sometimes called tortious interference with business relationships, which is a pretty good approximation to Yari Lumnus. If you have a relationship, exactly what defines a relationship is something we're going to see more. That's obviously one of the key questions, and many or most Dinei Torah really hinge on that. Was there a sufficiently advanced relationship for there to be an Isser of Ani Mahapech? But that's ultimately what our sugya is about. Now, in the case I mentioned, the reason I wrote about this, about the Wells Fargo Wachovia Citigroup case, it was eventually settled for $100 million later. So the Wells Fargo bought it, and that's why my bank account today is Wells Fargo. The one facet of that case was that Citigroup was only buying about $2 billion, only some of their operations. Wells Fargo made an offer for the entire bank at about $15, $16 billion. That's what the one eventually went through. That was a much more attractive offer to Wachovia. They would rather sell the whole thing off as a unit, keep it together, get a better price, more value for the shareholders, as opposed to Citi's offer, which was only a couple of billion for one unit. So would Ani Mahapech apply in such a case? So virtually this exact case is discussed, not with banks, with barrels actually, is discussed by the Erech Shai. He had a case of a fellow who was trying to sell 10 barrels of wine. And he first had an offer for 4. He didn't really want to sell 4, but he didn't have any other customers, so he accepted an offer for 4. Then, before the sale went through, someone else came along and offered all 10. So he promptly unraveled his transaction with the first guy and offered all 10 to the second guy. The second guy, who was an Erlich guy, when he heard that he was taking the deal away from someone who had already made an offer for four, said maybe it's not the right thing to do. Ani Mahapik, the first guy was already Mahapik in four of the barrels. The Erech Shnai rules that there is nothing wrong with this. He's allowed to go ahead with the deal. And makes this point. He says, since for the seller, the 10-barrel offer is much more attractive, he doesn't want to have to go through the whole tircha of making another sale for another 6 barrels. So Chazal, we're not misaking Ani Mahapech whenever the seller, at least when he's a Jew, but certainly when he's a Jew, Chazal, we're not misaking Ani Mahapech Baharara when it will be against the interest of the seller. And he makes the same point elsewhere, that even if simply the offer is greater, even if the offer of the second party is greater than the first one, that in and of itself is a reason why there is no Ani Mahapech Baharara. By analogy, he says, a source for this, we find a similar halacha in the context of Bar Metzra. Bar Metzra is a halacha that essentially that the neighboring owner of a piece of property has the right of first refusal if the property is offered up for sale. If anyone else buys it, they have to first offer it to he has the right to take it and say, I'll give you what you paid for it, I'll take it. And there also, one of the fundamental principles there is that the rules of Bar Metzra, which are quite complicated, but they never apply when it will be against the interest of the seller. Because the whole thing is that the Kanas Chazal, the Yashar V'Tov, they only did it where the seller has no interest one way or another. Then they said, give it to the neighbor because it's better that he should get it because he has synergy with both properties together. But certainly not if that will harm the interest of the seller. And that is the position of the Erech Shai.
Is there a shtar written here? Any type of shtar here?
Not usually. A shtar would make it much worse. But the din of Ani Mahapech applies even if there is no shtar. You do need some level of finality. They do have to have some sort of agreement, or they do have to be heading closely toward an agreement, but it's not a sin qua non. You can have Ani Mahapech, and you very often do, even when there is no shtar.
But if there's a shtar, then for sure that's the second person can't...
If there's a shtar, it can be much worse. If there's a shtar, then the first person could say, I have the right to it, you have no right to take it away. Right, a shtar would certainly be, and maybe even worse than Ani Mahapech. Yes. So, Erech Shnai is something of a Das Yachid here. A number of other acronym, the Machzeh Avram, Rav Steinberg, the Marshag, say this is absolutely not correct. They say that it's clear from the poskim, a point maybe we'll develop on a later date, but they say it's clear from the poskim that even though his basic premise is true, that Chazal certainly were not Masak and Ani Mahapech when it would hurt the interest of the seller, that just means, they say, they bring a Mardechai, that just means that before the seller agrees to a price, if the seller is still in the market looking for a deal, then Chazal didn't simply lock him into the first offer because that wouldn't be fair. That would hurt his interest. If they required him to accept the first offer and call that guy a Mahapech, that would be terrible because he would have to accept the first lowball bid. But once he accepts a certain bid, the fact that someone's offering more is not called he's losing money. He accepted that bid. It was worth it. And that deal was an acceptable deal for him. The mere fact that you're offering more, other Achronim say that is not a heter. And just a related point is, there is a major question among contemporary Achronim primarily, is there any Isser of Ani Mahapech at all on the seller? The Gemara and the Rishonim and the Achronim generally, almost always, talk about Ani Mahapech from the perspective of the buyer. You, the buyer, tortious interference, you shouldn't interfere with his deal. The buyer or the finder, any of the different kinds of relationships they can have. But from the seller's perspective, does he have any mitzvah of Ani Mahapech B'charara? So here, the Achronim come in completely different directions. Several Achronim say, no, it's only a mitzvah on the buyers. The seller, we'll see, the case can actually be reversed, where instead of two buyers chasing one seller, you can also have two sellers chasing one buyer. But basically, it's the person who's interfering with his rival, he has the Isser. The person in the middle of the triangle has no Isser. Other Achronim say, yes, he does. The Sefer Vayan David, a Satmar rabbi out of Europe, he says, of course he does. He has Lifnei Iver. He says, since the person who's interfering with the other person is being over an Isser, that person is doing an Isser by he's over Lifnei Iver. He's facilitating the illegitimate rival making an offer. So he has, at the very least, he has Lifnei Iver. Other posts can disagree. One of the Mekilim is actually one of the very early Achronim, the Nachal Yeshua, Rabbi Yeshua Sansino. He says that the seller has no Isser of Ani Mahapech. Now, the Sefer Vayan David actually brings this indirectly via several secondary sources and tries to say he doesn't mean it, but he didn't see the text inside. apparently it's pretty clear that he says there is no Isser, and the paradigm for this is he brings a famous Gemara in the Sugya of Ribbis. The Gemara says, the Gemara talks about Rav Ilash, who was a distinguished Amara, was once the love of the borrower on a certain business deal. And the Gemara discusses whether his deal was Ribbis, whether he was paying Ribbis to the lender. The Gemara says, no, that can't be what happened, because Rav Ilash was a Gavra Rabba, a great man like Rav Ilash, lo safil inish isura. He wouldn't cause people like the lender to do isura. So the Rishonim will ask, he wouldn't do an isur. Why don't you say the love can't do an isur of paying Ribbis? So they say that even though Ribbis daraisa, the love is over an isur, for Ribbis drabanan, case of avak Ribbis, of Ribbis drabanan, only the lender is over the isur, the borrower is not over the isur. And the Nachal Yeshua brings this as a paradigm for Ani Mahapech. He says, here too, Ani Mahapech, which he seems to assume is Drabanan perhaps, says, it's a Shaila, we'll see more about that. So therefore, only the person who takes it, who benefits, who steals it, is over the Isser, but the person who facilitates is not. There actually are Rishonim who say, there's not even Lufnei Iver. Some, we pass in Shulchan Aruch and Ribbis, that the borrower will be over Lufnei Iver, even though the Malva is over Drabanan, the love will be over Lufnei Iver on a Drabanan. But there are Rishonim who say that not even that the love, for whatever reason, not even over Lufnei Iver. Anyway, that's the position of the Nachal Yeshua and several other Achronim, that the Mocher is not over anything at all. The Isser is only the rival himself, not to outmaneuver his rival, but the person who simply has to choose between the two of them. For him, there is no Isser. Regardless, everyone agrees that he has the right to make his own decision and to say, I don't like your offer, I want someone else's offer. If he's really still willing to stick with the first offer, just now that someone else made an illegitimate offer, he's going to shift. That's a shaila. There are some poskim who say that if he was really ready to go along with the first one, like in the case of the Erech Shai, now that someone made an offer, Shalok Adin, accidentally or deliberately, now he wants to shift to him, that's something that's wrong. But certainly, in general, he has the right to make up his mind, and the right to withhold making up his mind and say, I want to hear more offers, and I certainly can't force me to sell my property at terms that are unfavorable to me. If, however, I'm happy and I have a deal, then that's where the Isser Ani Mahapech comes for the interloper, for the rival to try to push aside the first one, and that's where there's a shaila that maybe even the seller, maybe over Lufnei Iver, if he really was ready to go with the first guy, there's even a shaila, maybe he's over Lufnei Iver for going to the rival.